white persons. Books shall not be interchangeable between the white and colored schools, but shall continue to be used by the race first using them. I read through 4 of the 25 pages, mesmerized by how many laws exist to separate us. Negroes and whites are not allowed to share water fountains, movie houses, public restrooms, ballparks, phone booths, circus shows. Negroes cannot use the same pharmacy or buy postage stamps at the same window as me. I think about Constantine, the time my family took her to Memphis with us, and the highway had mostly washed out, but we had to drive straight on through because we knew the hotels wouldn't let her in. I think about how no one in the car would come out and say it. We all know about these laws. We live here, but we don't talk about them. This is the first time I've ever seen them written down. Lunch counters, the state fair, pool tables, hospitals. Number 47 I have to read twice, for its irony. The board shall maintain a separate building on separate grounds for the instruction of all blind persons of the colored race. After several minutes, I make myself stop. I start to put the booklet back, telling myself I'm not writing a book about Southern legislation. This is a waste of my time. But then I realize, like a shell cracking open in my head, there's no difference between these government laws and Hilly building Abilene a bathroom in the garage, except 10 minutes worth of signatures in the state capitol. On the last page, I see the pica type that reads, Property of Mississippi Law Library. The booklet was returned to the wrong building. I scratch my revelation on a piece of paper and tuck it inside the booklet. Jim Crow or Hilly's bathroom plan? What's the difference? I slip it in my bag. Susie sneezes behind the desk across the room. I head for the doors. I have a league meeting in 30 minutes. I give Susie an extra friendly smile. She's whispering into the phone. The stolen books in my bag feel like they're pulsing with heat.
Skater! Susie hisses from the desk, eyes wide. Did I really hear you have been seeing Stuart Whitworth?
She puts a bit too much emphasis on the you for me to keep up my smile. I act like I don't hear her and walk out into the bright sunshine. I've never stolen a thing in my life before today. I'm a little satisfied it was on Susie's watch. Our places of comfort are expectedly different, my friends and I. Elizabeth's is hunched over her sewing machine, trying to make her life look seamless, store-bought. Mine is at my typewriter, writing pithy things I'll never have the guts to say out loud. And Hilly's is behind a podium, telling 65 women that 3 cans apiece isn't enough to feed all those PSCAs, the poor starving children of Africa, that is. Mary Jolene Walker, however, thinks 3 is plenty.
And isn't it kind of expensive, carting all this tin across the world to Ethiopia? Mary Jolene asks. Doesn't it make more sense just to send them a check?
The meeting has not officially started, but Hilly's already behind her podium. There's a franticness in her eyes. This isn't our normal evening time, but an extra afternoon session, Hilly's called. In June, many of the members are going out of town for summer vacations. Then, in July, Hilly leaves for her annual trip down to the coast for 3 weeks. It's going to be hard for her to trust an entire town to operate properly without her here. Hilly rolls her eyes.
You cannot give these tribal people money, Mary Jolene. There is no Jitney 14 grocery in the Ogaden Desert. And how would we know if they're even feeding their kids with it? They're likely to go to the local voodoo tent and get a satanic tattoo with our money.
All right. Mary Jolene teeters off, flat-faced, brainwashed looking.
I guess you know best.
It is this bug-eyed effect Hilly has on people that makes her such a successful league president. I make my way across the crowded meeting room, feeling the warmth of attention, as if a beam of light is shining down on my head. The room is full of cake-eating, tab-drinking, cigarette-smoking women all about my age. Some are whispering to each other, glancing my way.
Skeeter, Liza Presley says before I make it past the coffee urns. Did I hear? You were at the Robert E. Lee a few weeks ago.
Is that right? Are you really seeing Stuart Whitworth?
Says Frances Greenbow. Most of the questions are not unkind, not like Susie's at the library. Still, I shrug, try not to notice how when a regular girl gets asked out, it's information, but when Skeeter Phelan gets asked out, it's news. But it's true. I am seeing Stuart Whitworth, and have been for 3 weeks now. Twice at the Robert E. Lee, if you include the disaster date, and 3 more times sitting on my front porch for drinks before he drove home to Vicksburg. My father even stayed up past 8 o'clock to speak to him.
Night, son. You tell the senator we sure do appreciate him stomping out that farm tax bill.
Mother's been trembling, torn between the terror that I'll screw it up and glee that I actually like men. The white spotlight of wonder follows me as I make my way to Hilly. Girls are smiling and nodding at me.
When will y'all see each other again?
This is Elizabeth now, twisting a napkin, eyes wide like she's staring at a car accident.
Did he say?
Tomorrow night, as soon as he can drive over.
Good.
Hilly's smile is a fat child's at the Seal Lily ice cream window. The button on her red suit coat bulges.
We'll make it a double date, then.
I don't answer. I don't want Hilly and William coming along. I just want to sit with Stuart. Have him look at me and only me. Twice, when we were alone, he brushed my hair back when it fell in my eyes. He might not brush my hair back if they're around.
William will telephone Stuart tonight. Let's go to the picture show.
All right, I sigh.
I'm just dying to see It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Won't this be fun?
Hilly says.
You and me, and William and Stuart.
It strikes me as suspicious, the way she's arranged the names. As if the point were for William and Stuart to be together, instead of me and Stuart. I know I'm being paranoid. But everything makes me wary now. 2 nights ago, as soon as I crossed over the colored bridge, I was stopped by a policeman. He shone his flashlight in the truck, let it shine on the satchel. He asked for my license and where I was going. I'm taking a check to my maid, Constantine. I forgot to pay her. Another cop pulled up, came to my window.
Why did you stop me?
I asked. My voice sounding about 10 pitches too high.
Did something happen?
I asked. My heart was slamming against my chest. What if they looked in my satchel?
Some Yankee trash stirring up trouble. We'll catch 'em, ma'am,
he said, patting his billy club.
Do your business and get back over the bridge.
When I got to Abilene Street, I parked even farther down the block. I walked around to her back door instead of using the front. I shook so bad for the first hour, I could hardly read the questions I'd written for Minnie. Hilly gives the 5-minute till bang with her gavel. I make my way to my chair, lug my satchel onto my lap. I tick through the contents, suddenly conscious of the Jim Crow booklet I stole from the library. In fact, my satchel holds all the work we've done. Abilene and Minnie's interviews, the book outline, a list of potential maids, a scathing, unmailed response I wrote to Hilly's bathroom initiative, everything I can't leave at home for fear Mother will snoop through my things. I keep it all in a side zip pocket with a flap over it. It bulges unevenly.
Scare, those poplin pants are just the cutest thing. Why haven't I seen those before?
Carol Ringer says a few chairs away, and I look up at her and smile, thinking, because I wouldn't dare wear old clothes to a meeting, and neither would you. Clothing questions irritate me after so many years of Mother hounding me. I feel a hand on my other shoulder and turn to find Hilly with her finger in my satchel, right on the booklet.
Do you have the notes for next week's newsletter? Are these them?
I hadn't even seen her coming.
No, wait,
I say, and ease the booklet back into my papers.
I need to correct one thing. I'll bring them to you a little later.
I take a deep breath. At the podium, Hilly looks at her watch, toying with the gavel like she's just dying to bang it. I push my satchel under my chair. Finally, the meeting begins. I record the PSCA news, who's on the trouble list, who's not brought in their cans. The calendar of events is full of committee meetings and baby showers, and I shift around in my wooden chair, hoping the meeting will end soon. I have to get Mother's car back to her by 3. It's not until a quarter till, an hour and a half later, that I rush out of the hot room toward the Cadillac. I'll be on the trouble list for leaving early. But Jesus Christ, what's worse, the wrath of Mother or the wrath of Hilly? I walk into the house 5 minutes early, humming Love Me Do, thinking I ought to go buy a short skirt like Jenny Fushi wore today. She said she'd gotten it up in New York City at Bergdorf Goodman's. Mother would keel over if I showed up with a skirt above the knee when Stuart picks me up on Saturday. Mama, I'm home, I call down the hallway. I pull a Coca-Cola from the fridge, sigh and smile, feeling good, strong. I head to the front door for my satchel, ready to go thread together more of Minnie's stories. I can tell she is itching to talk about Celia Foote, but she always stops after a minute of it and changes the subject. The phone rings and I answer it, but it's for Pascagoula. I take a message on the pad. It's Yule May, Hilly's maid. Hey, Yule May, I say, thinking what a small town this is. I'll give her the message when she gets back. I lean a minute against the counter, wishing Constantine was here like it used to be. How I'd love to share every single thing about my day with her. I sigh and finish my Coke and then go to the front door for my satchel. It's not there. I go outside and look in the car, but it's not there either. Huh, I think and head up the stairs, feeling less pink now and more of a pale yellow. Did I go upstairs yet? I scour my room, but it's nowhere to be found. Finally, I stand still in my quiet bedroom, a slow tingle of panic working its way up my spine. The satchel. It has everything in it. Mother, I think, and I dash downstairs and look in the relaxing room. But suddenly I realize it's not Mother who has it. The answer has come to me, numbing my entire body. I left my satchel at the League house. I was in such a hurry to get Mother's car home. And even as the phone is ringing, I already know it is Hilly on the end of that line. I grab the phone from the wall. Mother calls goodbye from the front door. Hello? How could you leave this heavy thing behind? Hilly asks. Hilly never has a problem with going through other people's things. In fact, she enjoys it.
Mother, wait a second,
I holler from the kitchen.
Good Lord, Skeeter, what's in here?
Hilly says. I've got to catch Mother. But Hilly's voice is muffled like she's bending down, opening it.
Nothing, just all those Miss Myrna letters, you know. Well, I've lugged it back to my house, so come on by and get it when you can.
Mother is starting the car outside.
Just keep it there. I'll be by as soon as I can get there.
I race outside, but Mother's already down the lane. I look over and the old truck's gone too, toting cottonseed somewhere in the fields.
The dread in my stomach is flat and hard and hot, like a brick in the sun. Down by the road, I watch the Cadillac slow, then jerk to a stop. Then it goes again, then stops, then slowly reverses and zigzags its way back up the hill. By the grace of a God I never really liked, much less believed in, my mother is actually coming back. I can't believe I forgot Sue Ann's casserole dish. I jump in the front passenger seat, wait until she climbs back into the car. She puts her hands on the wheel. Drive me by Hilly's. I need to pick something up. I press my hand to my forehead. Oh, God, hurry, Mother, before I'm too late. Mother's car hasn't moved. Skeeter, I have a million things to do today. The panic is rising up in my throat. Mama, please, just drive. But the DeVille sits in the gravel, ticking like a time bomb. Now look, Mother says. I have some personal errands to run, and I just don't think it's a good time to have you tagging along. It'll take you 5 minutes. Just drive, Mama. Mother keeps her white-gloved hands on the steering wheel, her lips pressed together. I happen to have something confidential and important to do today. I can't imagine my mother has anything more important to do than what I'm staring down the throat of. What? A Mexican's trying to join the DAR? Somebody got caught reading the New American Dictionary? Mother sighs, says, fine, and moves the gear shift carefully into drive. All right, here we go. We roll down the lane at about 1/10 of a mile an hour, putting along so the gravel won't knock at the paint job. At the end of the lane, she puts on her blinker like she's doing brain surgery and creeps the Cadillac out onto the county road. My fists are clenched. I press my imaginary accelerator. Every time's Mother's first time to drive. On the county road, she speeds up to 15 and grips the wheel like we're doing 105. Mama, I finally say, just let me drive the car. She sighs. I'm surprised that she pulls over into the tall grass. I get out and run around the car while she slides over. I put the car in D and press it to 70, praying, please, Hilly, resist the temptation to rummage through my personal business. So, what's the big secret? What do you have to do today? I ask. I'm going to see Dr. Neal for some tests. It's just routine. But I don't want your daddy to know. You know how upset he gets every time somebody goes to the doctor. What kind of tests? It's just an iodine test for my ulcers, same as I have every year. Drop me up the Baptist, and then you can take yourself to Hilly's. At least I won't have to worry over parking. I glance at her to see if there's more to this, but she's sitting straight and starched in her light blue dress, her legs crossed at the ankles. I don't remember her having these tests last year. Even with me being up at school, Constantine would have written to me about them. Mother must have kept them secret. 5 minutes later, at the Baptist Hospital, I come around and help her out of the car. Eugenia, please. Just because this is a hospital doesn't mean I'm an invalid. I open the glass door for her and she walks in, head held high. Mother, do you want me to come with you? I ask, knowing I can't. I have to deal with Hilly, but suddenly I don't want to drop her off here, like this. It's routine. Go on to Hilly's and come back in an hour. I watch her grow smaller down the long hall, clutching her handbag, knowing I should turn and run. But before I do, I wonder at how frail and inconsequential my mother has become. She used to fill a room by just breathing, and now there seems to be less of her. She turns a corner and disappears behind the pale yellow walls.
I watch a second longer before I rush back to the car. A minute and a half later, I'm ringing Hilly's bell. If these were regular times, I'd talk to Hilly about Mama, but I can't distract her. It is the first moment that will tell me everything. Hilly is an exceptional liar, except for the moment right before she speaks. Hilly opens the door. Her mouth is tight and red. I look down at her hands. They are knotted together like ropes. I've arrived too late.
"Well, that was quick,"
she says, and I follow her inside. My heart is seizing inside my chest. I'm not sure I'm breathing at all.
"There it is, that ugly thing. I hope you don't mind. I had to check something in the minutes from the meeting."
I stare at her, my best friend, trying to see just what she's read in my things. But her smile is professional, if not sparkling. The telling moments are gone.
"Can I get you something to sip on?"
"No, I'm fine." Then I add, "Want to hit balls at the club later? It's so gorgeous out."
"William's got a campaign meeting, and then we're going to see It's a Mad, 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 Mad World."
I study her. Didn't she ask me just 2 hours ago to double date to this movie tomorrow night? Slowly, I move down to the end of the dining table, like she might pounce on me if I move too fast. She picks up a sterling fork from the sideboard, thrums her index finger along the tines.
"Yes, I heard Spencer Tracy's supposed to be divine," I say.
Casually, I tick through the papers in my satchel. Abilene and Minnie's notes are still tucked deep in the side pocket, the flap closed, the latch snapped. But Hilly's bathroom initiative is in the open center section, with the paper where I wrote, "Jim Crow or Hilly's bathroom plan, what's the difference?" Besides this is the draft of the newsletter that Hilly has examined already. But the booklet, the laws, I tick through again. They are gone. Hilly tilts her head, narrows her eyes at me.
"You know, I was just thinking about how Stuart's daddy stood right next to Ross Barnett when they fought that colored boy walking into Ole Miss. They're awfully close, Senator Whitworth and Governor Barnett."
I open my mouth to say something, anything, but then 2-year-old William Jr. totters in.
"There you are."
Hilly picks him up, nuzzles his neck.
"You are perfect, my perfect boy,"
she says. William looks at me and screams.
"Well, enjoy the picture show,"
I say, going for the front door.
"All right,"
she says. I walk down the steps. From her doorway, Hilly waves, flaps William's hand bye-bye. She slams the door before I've even made it to my car.
Abilene. Chapter 14. I've been in some tense situations, but to have Minnie on one side of my living room and Miss Skeeter on the other, and the topic at hand be what it feel like being Negro and working for a white woman, law, it's a wonder they hadn't been an injury. We had some close calls, though. Like last week, when Miss Skeeter showed me Miss Hilly's reasons why colored folk need their own bathroom. "Feel like I'm looking at something from the KKK," I said to Miss Skeeter. We was in my living room and the nights had started to get warm. Minnie'd gone in the kitchen to stand in front of the icebox. Minnie don't stop sweating but for 5 minutes in January, and maybe not even then. "Hilly wants me to print it in the league newsletter," Miss Skeeter said, shaking her head disgusted. "I'm sorry, I probably shouldn't have shown it to you, but there's no one else I can tell." A minute later, Minnie come back from the kitchen. I gave Miss Skeeter a look, so she slid the list under her notebook. Minnie didn't look much cooler. In fact, she looked hotter than ever. "Minnie, do you and Leroy ever talk about civil rights?" Miss Skeeter asked when he comes home from work. Minnie had that big bruise on her arm because that's what Leroy do when he come home from work. He push her around. Nope, was all Minnie said. Minnie did not like people up in her business. Really? He doesn't share the way he feels about the marches and the segregation. Maybe at work his boss... Move off of Leroy. Minnie crossed her arms up so that bruise wouldn't show. I gave Skeeter a nudge on the foot, but Miss Skeeter, she had that look she gets when she's all up in something. Abilene, don't you think it would be interesting if we could show a little of the husband's perspective? Minnie, maybe... Minnie stood so quick the light shade rattled. I ain't doing this no more. You making this too personal. I don't care about telling white people how it feel. Minnie, okay, I'm sorry, Miss Skeeter said. We don't have to talk about your family. No, I changed my mind. You find somebody else to spill the beans. We've been through this before, but this time Minnie snatched up her pocketbook, grabbed her funeral fan that fell under the chair, and said, I'm sorry, Abe, but I just can't do this no more. I got a panicky feeling then. She really gonna leave. Minnie can't quit. She the only maid besides me who agreed to do it. So I leaned up, slipped Hilly's piece of paper out from under Miss Skeeter's notebook. My fingers stopped right in front of Minnie. She looked down at it. What that? I put on my blank face, shrugged my shoulders, couldn't act like I really wanted her to read it, 'cause then she wouldn't. Minnie picked it up and started skimming. Pretty soon I could see all her front teeth, but she wasn't smiling. Then she looked at Miss Skeeter long and heavy. She said, Maybe we keep going then, but you stay out of my personal business, you hear? Miss Skeeter nodded. She learning. I mix an egg salad for Miss Lee Folt and baby girl's lunch. Put them little pickles on the side to fancy it up. Miss Lee Folt sat at the kitchen table with Mae Mobley, start telling her how the baby's gonna be here in October, how she hopes she don't have to be in the hospital for the old Miss homecoming game, how she might have her little sister or little brother, and wonder what they gonna name it. It's nice seeing them talking like this. Half the morning, Miss Lee Folt been on the phone with Miss Hilly, gossiping about something, hardly noticing baby girl at all. And once the new baby come, Mae Mobley ain't gonna get so much as a swat from her mama. After lunch, I take baby girl out to the backyard and fill up the green plastic pool. It's already 95 degrees outside. Mississippi got the most unorganized weather in the nation. In February, it'll be 15 degrees and you'll be wishing spring would come on. And the next day, it's 90 degrees for the next 9 months. The sun's shining, Mae Mobley's sitting in the middle of that pool in bathing bottoms. First thing she do is take off that top. Miss Lee Folt come outside and say, That looks like fun. I'm fixing to call Hilly, tell her to bring Heather and Lil' Will over here. And before I know it, all three kids is playing in there, splashing around, having a good old time. Heather, Miss Hilly's girl, she pretty cute. She's 6 months older than Mae Mobley, and Mae Mobley just love her. Heather got dark, shiny curls all over her head and some little freckles, and she real talkative. She pretty much just a short version of Miss Hilly, only a look better on the child. Little William Jr., he too. He toe-headed and he don't say nothing, just waddle around like a duck, following them girls through the high monkey grass on the edge of the yard, to the swing set that hitch up on one side if you swing too high and scare me to death, and back into the baby pool. One thing I gotta say about Miss Hilly, she love her children. About every 5 minutes, she kiss little Will on the head, or she ask Heather is she having fun, or come here and give Mama a hug, always telling her she the most beautiful girl in the world. And Heather love her Mama, too. She looked at Miss Hilly like she looking up at the Statue of Liberty. That kind of love always make me want to cry, even when it going to Miss Hilly, 'cause it makes me think about Tree Lore, how much he loved me. I appreciate seeing a child adoring their mama. We grown-ups are sitting in the shade of the magnolia tree while the kids play. I put a few feet between me and the ladies so it's proper. They got towels down and them black iron chairs that get so hot. I like to sit in the plastic green folding chair, keep my legs cool. I watch Mae Mobley make Barbie doll do the skinny dip, jumping off the side of the pool. But I got my eye on the ladies, too. I've been noticing how Miss Hilly act all sweet and happy when she talked to Heather and William, but every time she turned to Miss Leafboat, she get a sneer on her face. Abilene, give me a little more iced tea, would you please? Hilly asked. I go and get the pitcher from the refrigerator. See, that's what I don't understand, I hear Miss Hilly say when I'm close enough. Nobody wants to sit down on a toilet seat they have to share with them. It does make sense, Miss Leafholt say, but then she hush up when I come over to fill up their glasses. Why, thank you, Miss Hilly say. Then she give me a real perplexed look, say, Abilene, you like having your own toilet, don't you? Yes, ma'am. She's still talking about that pot even though it's been in there 6 months. Separate but equal, Miss Hilly say back to Miss Leafholt. That's what Governor Ross Barnett says is right, and you can't argue with the government. Miss Leafholt clap her hand on her thigh like she got the most interesting thing to change the subject to. I'm with her. Let's discuss something else. Did I tell you what Raleigh said the other day? But Miss Hilly shaking her head. Abilene, you wouldn't want to go to a school full of white people, would you? No, ma'am, I mumble. I get up and pull the ponytail holder out of baby girl's head. Them green plastic balls get all tangly when her hair get wet. But what I really want to do is put my hands up over her ears so she can't hear this talk. And worse, hear me agreeing. But then I think, why? Why I have to stand here and agree with her? And if Mae Mobley gonna hear it, she gonna hear some sense. I get my breath, my heart beating hard, and I say polite as I can. Not a school full of just white people, but where the colored and the white folks is together. Hilly and Miss Leafholt both look at me. I look back down at the kids. But, Abilene, Miss Hilly smiled real cold. Colored people and white people are just so different. She wrinkled up her nose. I feel my lip curling. Of course we different. Everybody know colored people and white people ain't the same. But we still just people. Shoot, I haven't been hearing Jesus had colored skin living out there in the desert. I press my lips together. It don't matter, though, 'cause Miss Hilly already moved on. Ain't nothing to her. She back to her low-down talk with Miss Leafholt. Out of nowhere, a big, heavy cloud covered the sun. I expect we about to get a shower. Government knows best. And if Skeeter thinks she's going to get away with this colored nut... Mama! Mama, look at me! Holler Heather from the pool. Look at my pigtails! I see you. I do. What with William running for office next... Mama, give me your comb. I want to do beauty parlor. Cannot have colored supporting friends in my closet. Mama, give me your comb. Get your comb for me. I read it. I found it in her satchel, and I intend to take action. And then Miss Hilly quiet, hunting for her comb in her pocketbook. Thunder boom over in South Jackson, and way off we hear the wail of the tornado bell. I'm trying to make sense of what Miss Hilly just said. Miss Skeeter, her satchel. I read it. I get the kids out the pool, swaddle them up in towels. The thunder come crashing out the sky. A minute after dark, I'm sitting at my kitchen table twirling my pencil. My white library copy of Huckleberry Finn's in front of me, but I can't read it. I got a bad taste in my mouth, bitter like coffee grounds in the last sip. I need to talk to Miss Skeeter. I ain't never called her house except 2 times 'cause I had no choice, when I told her I'd work on the stories and then to tell her Minnie would too. I know it's risky, still I get up, put my hand on the wall phone. But what if a mama answer or her daddy? I bet their maid gone home hours ago. How Miss Skeeter gonna explain a colored woman calling her up on the telephone? I sit back down. Miss Skeeter come over here 3 days ago to talk to Minnie. Seemed like everything was fine. Nothing like when the police pull her over a few weeks ago. She didn't say nothing about Miss Hilly. I huff in my chair a while, wishing the phone would ring. I shoot up and race a cockroach across the floor with my work shoe. Cockroach win. He crawl under that grocery bag of clothes Miss Hilly gimme. Been sitting there for months. I stare at the sack, start twirling that pencil in my hand again. I got to do something with that bag. I'm used to ladies giving me clothes. Got white lady clothes out the wazoo. Ain't had to buy my own clothes in 30 years. It always takes a while till they feel like mine. When Tree Law was a little thing, I put on an old coat from some lady I was waiting on, and Tree Law, he look at me funny, back away. Say I smell white. But this bag is different. Even what would fit me in that paper sack, I can't wear. Can't give to my friends either. Every piece in that bag, the culotte pants, the shirt with the Peter Pan collar, the pink jacket with the gravy stain on it, even the socks, they all got the letters HWH sewn in. Red thread. Pretty little cursive letters. I reckon Yule May had to sew them letters. Wearing those, I'd feel like I was personal own property of Hilly W. Holbrook. I get up and kick at the bag, but the cockroach don't come out. So I take out my notebook, intending to start on my prayers. But I'm just too deep worrying about Miss Hilly, wondering what she meant when she said Reddit. After a while, my mind done drifted to where I wish it wouldn't. I reckon I know pretty well what would happen if the white ladies found out we was writing about them, telling the truth of what they really like. Women's, they ain't like men. Now, women ain't gonna beat you with a stick. Miss Hilly wouldn't pull no pistol on me. Miss Lee Folk wouldn't come burn my house down, nah. White women's like to keep their hands clean. They got a shiny little set of tools they use, sharp as witches' fingernails, tidy and laid out neat like the picks on a dentist tray. They gonna take their time with them. First thing a white lady gonna do is fire you. You upset, but you figure you get another job when things settle down, when the white lady get around to forgetting. You got a month rent saved. People bring you squash casseroles. But then a week after you lost your job, you get this little yellow envelope stuck in your screen door. Paper inside say, notice of eviction. Every landlord in Jackson be white, and everyone got a white wife that's friends with somebody. You start to panic some then. You still ain't got no job prospects. Everywhere you try, the door slams in your face. And now you ain't got a place to live. Then it starts to come a little faster. If you got a note on your car, they gonna repossess it. If you got a parking ticket you ain't paid, you going to jail. If you got a daughter, maybe you go live with her. She tend to a white family of her own. But a few days later, she come home, say, Mama, I just got fired. She look hurt, scared. She don't understand why. You got to tell her it's 'cause of you. Least her husband's still working. Least they can feed the baby. Then they fire her husband. Just another little sharp tool, shiny and fine. They both pointing at you crying, wondering why you done it. You can't even remember why. Weeks pass and nothing, no jobs, no money, no house. You hope this is the end of it, that she done enough, she ready to forget. It'll be a knock on the door late at night. It won't be the white lady at the door. She don't do that kind of thing herself. But while the nightmare's happening, the burning or the cutting or the beating, you realize something you known all your life. The white lady don't ever forget. And she ain't gonna stop till you dead. The next morning, Miss Skeeter pulled her Cadillac up in Miss Leafoat's driveway. I got raw chicken on my hands and a flame on the stovetop, and May Mobley whining 'cause she's starving to death, but I can't stand it another second. I walk in the dining room with my dirty hands up in the air. Miss Skeeter, she asking Miss Leafoat about a list of girls who's serving on a committee. And Miss Leafoat say, "The head of the cupcake committee is Eileen." And Miss Skeeter say, "But the cupcake committee chairman is Roxanne." And Miss Leafoat say, "No, the cupcake co-chair is Roxanne, and Eileen is the cupcake head." And I'm getting so peccatated over this cupcake talk, I want to poke Miss Skeeter with my raw chicken finger, but I know better than to interrupt, so I don't. There ain't no talk at all about the satchel. Before I know it, Miss Skeeter out the door. Law. That night after supper, me and the cockroach stare each other down across the kitchen floor. He big, inch and a half. He black, blacker than me. He making a crackling sound with his wings. I got my shoe in my hand. The phone rang, we both jump. "Hey, Abilene," Miss Skeeter say, and I hear a door shut. "Sorry to call so late." I breathe out. "I'm glad you did. I was just calling to see if you had any word from any other maids, I mean." Miss Skeeter sounds strange, tight in the jaw. Lately she been glowing like a firefly, she's so in love. My heart start drumming. Still, I don't jump right in with my questions. I ain't sure why. I asked Corrine, who worked with the coolie. She say no. Then Rhonda and Rhonda's sister, who wait on the Millers, both of them say no, too. "What about you, May? Have you talked to her recently?" I wondered then if that's why Miss Skeeter acting strange. See, I told Miss Skeeter a fib. I told her a month ago I asked Yule May, but I didn't. It's not just that I don't know Yule May well. It's that she Miss Hilly Holbrook's maid, and anything having to do with that name makes me nervous. "Not real recent. Maybe I try her again," I lie, hating it. Then I get back to jiggling my pencil, ready to tell her what Miss Hilly said. "Abilene," Miss Skeeter's voice gone all shaky, "I have to tell you something." Miss Skeeter get quiet, and it's like them eerie seconds before a funnel cloud drop. "What happened, Miss Skeeter?"
"I left my satchel at the league. Hilly picked it up."
I squint my eyes, feel like I ain't hearing too good.
"The red one?"
She don't reply.
"Oh, law. This is all starting to make a sixth sense. The stories were in a flat pocket on the side in another folder. I think all she saw were Jim Crow laws, some booklet I'd picked up at the library, but I can't say for sure."
"Oh, Miss Skeeter," I say and shut my eyes. "God help me, God help Minnie."
I know,
Miss Skeeter say, and start to cry into the phone. All right now. I tried to make myself swallow my anger down. It was an accident, I tell myself. Kicking her ain't gonna do us no good.
But still. "Abilene, I am so, so sorry."
There's a few seconds of nothing but heart pumping. Real slow and scary. My brain start ticking through the few facts she given me. What I know myself. "How long ago this happened?" I ask.
3 days ago. I wanted to find out what she knew before I told you."
"You talked to Miss Hilly?"
"Just for a second when I picked it up, but I've talked to Elizabeth and Luann and probably 4 other girls who know Hilly. Nobody said anything about it. That was why I asked about Yule May," she say. I was wondering if she'd heard anything at work. I drew in a breath, hating what I have to tell her. I heard it. Yesterday. Miss Hilly was talking to Miss Leafolt about it. Miss Skeeter, don't say nothing. I feel like I'm waiting for a brick to come slamming through my window. She talking about Mr. Holbrook running for office and how you supporting colored people, and she say she read something. Saying it out loud now, I'm shaking and still bobbing the pencil between my fingers. Did she say anything about maids? Miss Skeeter asked. I mean, was she only upset with me, or did she mention you or Minnie? No, just you. Okay. Miss Skeeter blow air into the phone. She sound upset, but she don't know what could happen to me, to Minnie. She don't know about them sharp, shiny utensils a white lady use. About that knock on the door late at night. That there are white men out there hungry to hear about a colored person crossing whites, ready with they wooden bats, matchsticks, any little thing'll do. I can't say 100%, but, Mosquito say, if Hilly knew anything about the book or you or especially Minnie, she'd be spreading it all over town. I think on this, wanting so hard to believe her. It's true she do not like Minnie Jackson. Aveline, Miss Skeeter say, and I hear her start to break down again. That calm down in her voice is cracking. We can stop. I understand completely if you want to stop working on it. If I say I don't want to do it anymore, then everything I've been writing and still have to write ain't gonna get to be said. No, I think. I don't want to stop. I'm surprised by how loud I think it. If Miss Hilly know, she know, I say. Stopping ain't gonna save us now. I don't see, hear, or smell Miss Hilly for 2 days. Even when I ain't holding the pencil, my fingers is jiggling it. In my pocket, on the kitchen counter, thumping like drumsticks, I got to find out what's inside Miss Hilly's head. Miss Leafolt leave Yule May 3 messages for Miss Hilly, but she always at Mr. Holbrook's office. The campaign HQ is what Miss Hilly been calling it. Miss Leafolt sigh, hang up the phone like she just don't know how her brain gonna operate without Miss Hilly coming over to push the think buttons. 10 times baby girl asked when little Heather gonna come play in the plastic pool again. I reckon they'll be good friends growing up, with Miss Hilly teaching them both how things is. By that afternoon, we all wandering around the house, jiggling our fingers, wondering when Miss Hilly gonna show up again. After a while, Miss Leafolk go to the material store. Say she gonna make a cover for something. She don't know what. May Mobley look at me, and I reckon we thinking the same thing. That woman would cover us both up if she could. I have to work real late that evening. I feed baby girl supper and put her to bed, 'cause Mr. and Miss Leafoot gone to see a picture at the Lamar. Mr. Leafoot promised he'd take her, and she hold him to it, even though it's only the late show left. When they get home, they yawning. Crickets is cricking. Other houses I'd sleep in the maid's room, but there ain't one here. I kind of hang around thinking Mr. Leafolk gonna offer to drive me home, but he just go right to bed. Outside in the dark, I walk all the way up to Riverside, about 10 minutes away, where they run a late bus for the nighttime water plant workers. The breeze is good enough to keep the mosquitoes off. I sit on the edge of the park in the grass under the streetlight. Bus come after a while, ain't but 4 people on there, 2 colored, 2 white, all men's. I don't know any of 'em. I take a window seat behind a thin colored fella. He got on a brown suit and a brown hat, be about my age. We cross the bridge, head in the direction of the colored hospital where the bus makes its turn. I got my prayer book out so I can write some things down. I concentrate on May Mobley.
try to keep my mind off Miss Hilly. Show me how to teach baby girl to be kind, to love herself, to love others, while I got time with her. I look up. The bus done stopped in the middle of the road. I lean over into the aisle, see a few blocks up these blue lights flashing in the dark. People standing around, a roadblock. White driver stay ahead. He turn off the motor and my seat goes still, feel strange. He straighten his driver's hat, hop out the seat. Y'all stay put. Let me find out what's going on. So we all sit there in the quiet, waiting. I hear a dog barking. Not a house dog, but the kind that sound like he yelling at you. After full 5 minutes, driver get back on the bus, start the motor again. He toot his horn, wave his hand out the window, and start backing up real slow. What happened up there? Colored man in the front of me called to the driver. Driver don't answer, he keep backing up. The flashing lights is getting smaller, the dog barking fading off. Driver turned the bus around on Ferris Street. At the next corner, he stopped. Colored people off, last stop for you, he holler in the rear view. White people, let me know where y'all need to get to. I'll get you close as I can. The colored man looked back at me. I guess we both ain't got a good feeling. He stand up, so I do too. I follow him to the front door. It's eerie quiet, just the sound of our feet. White man lean up to the driver, say, what's going on? I follow the colored man down the steps of the bus. Behind me, I hear the driver say, I don't know, some nigger got shot. Where you headed? The door swished closed. Oh, Lord, I think, please don't let this be any of my peoples. Ain't a sound on Ferris Street, or a person except us two. The man look at me. You all right? You close to home? I'll be all right. I'm close. My house is 7 blocks from here. Want me to walk you? I kind of do, but I shake my head. No, thank you. I'll be fine. A news truck whizzed by way down at the intersection the bus turned off of. Big WLBTTV letters on the side. Law, I hope this ain't as bad as it. But the man gone. They ain't a soul now but me. I get that feeling people talk about right before they get mugged. In 2 seconds, my stockings is rubbing together so fast I sound like zipper zipping. Up ahead, I see 3 people walking fast like me. All of them turn off, go into houses, shut the door. I'm real sure I don't want to be alone another second. I cut between Mule Cato's house and the back of the auto repair, then through Oni Black's yard, trip on a hose pipe in the dark. I feel like a burglar. Can see lights on inside the houses, heads bent down, lights that should be off this time of night. Whatever going on, everybody either talking about it or listening to it. Finally, up ahead, I see Minnie's kitchen light. Back door open, screen door closed. The door make a whine when I push it. Minnie's sitting at the table with all 5 kids. Leroy Jr., Sugar, Felicia, Kendra, and Benny. I guess Leroy Sr. gone to work. They all staring at the big radio in the middle of the table. A wave of static come in with me. What is it? I say. Minnie frown, fiddle with the dial. In a second I take in the room. A ham slice curled and red in a skillet. A tin can on the counter, lid open. Dirty plates in the sink. Ain't Minnie's kitchen at all. What happened? I ask again. The radio man come into tune, hollering.
Almost 10 years serving as the field secretary for the NAACP. Still no word from the hospital, but wounds are said to be...
Who? I say. Minnie stare at me like I ain't got my head on. Medgar Evers, where you been? Medgar Evers, what happened? I met Merle Evers, his wife, last fall when she visited our church with Mary Bones' family. She wore this smart red and black scarf tied on her neck. I remember how she looked me in the eye and smiled, like she was real glad to meet me. Medgar Evers like a celebrity around here, being so high in the NAACP. Sit down, Minnie say. I sat in a wooden chair. They all ghost-faced, staring at the radio. It's about half the size of a car engine, wood, four knobs on it. Even Kendra quiet in Sugar's lap. KKK shot him, front of his house an hour ago. I feel a prickle creep up my spine. Where he live? On Gines, many say. The doctors got him at our hospital. I saw, I say, thinking of the bus. Gines ain't but 5 minutes away from here if you got a car.
Witnesses say it was a single man, a white male, who jumped from the bushes. Rumors of KKK involvements are...
Now they some unorganized talking on the radio. Some people yelling, some fumbling round. I tense up like somebody watching us from outside, somebody white. The KKK was here, 5 minutes away, to hunt down a colored man. I want to close that back door.
I was just informed, the announcer say, panting, that Medgar Evers is dead. Medgar Evers, he sound like he getting pushed around, voices round him, I was just told, has died.
Oh, law. Minnie turned to Leroy Jr., her voice low, steady. Take your brothers and your sisters in the bedroom, get in bed, and stay back there. It always sounds scarier when a hollerer talks soft. Even though I know Leroy Jr. want to stay, he give him a look and they all disappear, quiet, quick. The radio man go quiet, too, for a second. That box nothing but brown wood and wires.
Medgar Evers, he say, his voice sounding like it's rolling backwards. NAACP, field secretary, is dead. He sigh. Medgar Evers is dead.
I swallow back a mouthful of spit and stare at Minnie's wall paint that's gone yellow with bacon grease. Baby hands, Leroy's paw malls. No pictures or calendars on Minnie's walls. I'm trying not to think. I don't want to think about a colored man dying. It'll make me remember tree lore. Minnie's hands is in fists. She gritting her teeth. Shot him right in front of his children, Abilene. We gonna pray for the Everses. We gonna pray for Merle. But it just sounds so empty, so I stop. Radio say his family run out the house when they heard the shots. Say he bloody, stumbling around, all the kids with blood all over them. She slap her hand on the table, rattling the wood radio. I hold my breath, but I feel dizzy. I got to be the one who's strong. I got to keep my friend here from losing it.
Things ain't never gonna change in this town, Abilene. We living in hell. We trapped. Our kids is trapped.
Radio man get loud again, say,
policemen everywhere blocking the road. Mayor Thompson is expected to hold a press conference shortly.
I choke then. The tears roll down. It's all them white peoples that breaks me. Standing around the colored neighborhood. White peoples with guns pointed at colored peoples. 'Cause who gonna protect our peoples? Ain't no colored policemans. Minnie stare at the door the kids went through. Sweat's drilling down the sides of her face.
What they gonna do to us, Abilene, if they catch us?
I take a deep breath. She talking about the stories. We both know it'd be bad.
But what would they do? Hitch us to a pickup and drag us behind? Shoot me in my yard in front of my kids? Or just starve us to death?
Mayor Thompson come on the radio, say how sorry he is for the Evers family. I look at the open back door and get that watched feeling again, with a white man's voice in the room. This ain't... We ain't doing civil rights.